today?
Yeah.
Your name?
Okay, I'm Dick Ambler, and my wife Jean is with me. And this is Thursday, October 27th, 1988. I was born in 1922, and Jean was the same year. My family had temporarily moved to Detroit at that time, so I was born in Detroit, and my dad built a home on Rogers Street. In 1925, we moved into that home. However, prior to that, I came out and we stayed with my great-grandfather, who lived at the corner of Rogers and Main, in that brick home with kind of a tower in it. And I remember that I always wanted to climb that tower, but I was too little. They wouldn't allow that. But then we moved into our home at 340 South Rogers, which was a nice home. And my dad at that point in time owned Ambler Furnace and Foundry Works, which was on Katy Street. And they poured the metal, and I used to go down and watch that. And you talk about safety rules. Boy, they didn't have them then. They would carry that molten metal in small pod carriers, I guess you call them, and they would step over things and pour it into these molds that they had made. But they ended up with furnaces and all the sheet metal work that went with it, and it was kind of fun. And across the street from us, the two young men came over from England, the Frid brothers, and they started the laundry. And they ran that laundry, which was in the building that's still there. I think Bellinger is in there now, the multi-story building. And that was the Northville Laundry owned by the Frid brothers. And they later, as you may recall, moved down here on Center Street and built a place about where Hardee's is now, I think, in that vicinity.
Was that a spot perhaps where the Friendly store was and is now Office?
Yes, I think maybe, yeah. And then Ritchie Brothers took it over later. But and at that time, and I happen to be reading in the record today that Mike Allen was quoted as saying that Katy Street and South Main joined, and they did. But, ironically, I was riding with Lee Holland this morning, and I mentioned to him, asked him if he ever remembered the little bridge. In other words, if you go down and you go by the car wash, and there was a little landscaping office there. If you veered to the right, that's where the road went. It went to the right of that and across that creek with an old steel bridge. And that was the main street in and out of Northville.
That's the stream that went from the mill over underneath the tracks.
Yep. And it continued on, and it really went almost behind my dad's foundry. But also at that point in time, the Stinson Aircraft Company owned one of the buildings, and the Globe Furniture Company was in there. And as a boy, we used to go into those buildings. I don't know how welcome we were, but there would be old aircraft parts.
And were they still operating?
No, not when I was a boy. But you know what was there back those years? We had the Northville Spring, but it was spring water at that time. And in fact, there was Silver Springs Pop Company. Did you know that? It's behind the railroad track. You go under the railroad tracks and you go back there, and they had this, and they had an open glass-covered casing with a light, so you could look down, you'd actually see the spring. Now, that spring was all disrupted when they built Highland Lakes,
And that's why we're now digging for a well to replace our well water. But that was originally all spring water. And as a boy, I clearly remember hauling that water to my mother. She liked that spring water. And in fact, I had a pony, and I used to think it was good for him, and I'd haul it over to him. But that was that old street and that old bridge, I remember very well. It came in almost where Ruby Office Supply is. I don't know whether it's still there. Now, my dad, my grandfather, owned a lumber and ice company. And it was on the Park Drive. Just east of Rogers Street, almost at the end of First Street. And the creek was dammed up there, and there was a huge Ambler pond. And that pond, in the wintertime, they would cut the ice and then store it in straw and sell the ice, sawdust or straw or whatever they used, and then sell the ice, peddle the ice in the summer. But as a boy, that dam had cracked, and it had about a 18-inch crack in it. It was a big dam. We used to be able to go down and run across the dam and jump over that, hopefully not fall through. And there was also a slaughterhouse down there, but it was closed up. So they did have a slaughterhouse, but that wasn't ours. I don't know that. Then, of course, it came through with the Park Drive, and I remember that.
7 miles, so it went right on over to Rogers, from Center to Rogers.
When they put in the Park Drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because previously they came right through town, you know. They came in over that little bridge, and they had to come up Main Street go through town that way. And
I think that was cut through after we moved to Northfield.
Yeah.
Was it?
The fish hatchery was there at that time, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. And it
above the pond, above Ambler Pond, I mean upstream from it?
Oh, yes. Where it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, where the tennis courts are.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a beautiful fish hatchery. We had, you know, it was a national fish hatchery.
United States government owned that.
And the head of the fish hatchery lived across the street in that huge home. I used to go and play with his son, I recall. And of course, in those days, we did our swimming in the gravel pits around here. And there's a gravel pit up behind Rural Hill Cemetery. In fact, I think the Deals live there now. It was Lawrence Gravel Pit at that time. And some of these that now advertise lakefront property front on those old gravel pits. But
Thompson's out 7 Mile Road.
Yeah, that's a later, you know, a later development than the Lawrence's gravel pit.
Yeah, the Blue Heron Lakes, I think, condominiums are on gravel pit.
Yes, that's right. And of course, we had Taft Gravel Pit, and that was right here on at 8 Mile and Taft Road. If you went up the hill, and they filled that all in. But there were two or three small pond gravel pits up there that Taft's owned.
Our children used to play up across Taft Road in the
woods. Sure they did. That's right, and ours as well, remember? Yeah. But I also, of course, remember that Katy Street and Dunlap Street were gravel when I was a young boy. And I remember that when they were paved, that was a major paving project.
Which street was that?
Katy Street, Dunlap, all across West, Wayne,
Wayne.
And all across the street.
And I know that it was about 58, 9, 60, they paved center above baseline.
That's correct.
It's a dirt road construction too.
Yeah.
On 9 Mile.
Now, you know, I was active in attempting to join the township and the city in the unification campaign. And at that time, it was brought out that my great-grandfather, William Ambler, was active in splitting the township of Northville and Plymouth into two townships, and they each have half the territory of a normal township.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried, they split them apart. We were trying to put the two little pieces back together, not the Plymouth Township. But, so he was active in politics, and he had a little office where the bookstore is on Main Street, that little office. Well, that was my great-grandfather's office. It was also my father's office at one time. And I worked in there as a boy working for Forney Coleman and Jim Spagnola. And Bill Forney owned also the Stroh's distributorship. And I would check the drivers in on a Saturday night, and they had all kinds of money. And that was during the Depression, you know. But we didn't have a problem with the sales of brew at that time. Another thing, and this is rambling and it's going in different directions, but one thing that stands out so vividly in my mind, I started with Chrysler in 1955, and I would say from 55 until 65 or maybe even a little later, if I would in the winter be involved in negotiations and maybe leave Detroit at 3 or 4 in the morning to drive home, and I would cut a path in the snow from Farmington Road to Northville in maybe 4 inches of snow, and that's only, you know, 20 years ago. And now, it's...
it's all solid.
Oh, and solid, and there's traffic.
Traffic,
know.
Yeah.
You'd never see a car coming home at that hour in the morning. Well, and the other thing I remember very clearly, Gene was a telephone operator. And we went together in high school. And then I left, and I went up to Chelsea. And she was working sometimes a midnight shift. And she would call me from the telephone office. I'd go to the office at 6 in the morning to get a call from her. She would call me, and then maybe every 3 or 4 minutes she'd have an interruption. And she'd say, hold on, you'd hear something, a bell ring or something. Then she'd say, hold on. And I'd hear her say, number please, and they'd give her the number. She'd say thank you, plug them in, and she'd come back and we'd talk till someone else. And there were darn few, you know, and their numbers would be, I'd like to call 24, or 102, or 324J, or 324M. Remember, those were your numbers,
as
a matter of
fact. My number.
But, that's the way our telephone system was.
They had their own local telephone system in town.
No, it was Michigan Bell. But they had the office up above Orange Jewelry, up there. Was the telephone.
It wasn't a separate exchange then, it was part of the Michigan Bell system.
Part of Michigan Bell, but it was the old system.
Well, now how about the days in school? What about your days in grade school and high school? Sports, so what kind of thing did you get involved in?
Oh, well, we were involved in football. We had the football team. We had the band. We had basketball. And those days, we played schools such as Trenton and Melvindale and Berkeley. Gene was very active. In fact, she still kind of thinks she was a superstar as a basketball player. But the girls did win a lot of, you won a lot of games.
We won 2 years in a row, and we played other schools, Berkeley, Redford Union, Malvindale. And after that, the girls didn't play other schools
for a
long time. But we had won the trophy for 2 years in a row, so we got to keep it. But I'm only 5'2", and a lot of the gals were, maybe the tallest one would be 5'6". You know, we were all shorter.
Who was the coach?
High school.
Gladys Ludwig. And
Ted Watts was, Mrs. Watts was the night telephone operator. If there was a fire, if there were police, you'd call Mrs. Watts, really. She'd alert.
Sort of a Watts line.
Yeah, and exactly. And in addition, I don't know whether you heard this before, but the way the police were notified, because they didn't have radios in their police cars, there was a light. They'd call the police, she'd put the light on, which hung at the four corners on one of the poles. And this red light would go on. And then when the police circled back through, he'd see his light was on, he'd call and find out what was happening. And have you heard that before?
No, I know the town I came from, in New York State, they had their own telephone exchange. Anytime anything happened, you called the telephone exchange to find out what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
She usually was the center of all the information came in and going.
But grade school, well, actually.
What building were you in?
Well, we were in the building that burned.
Faced West Street?
Yes, west, and it faced west and it cornered on Katy.
Oh, okay.
And in fact, my dad was on the school board at that time, and I remember going to the fire. Early in the morning, as I recall it, they meet 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. But we went to the fire, and there was a little boy. I was a little older than this kid. I must have been in the 5th or 6th grade. But there was a little boy standing next to us, and pretty soon a second floor room collapsed. The little guy's, oh boy, there goes my room. But then we were all jammed up, and a lot of kids were skipped.
Including
grades.
You.
Yeah.
You skipped a very important grade.
I skipped
grade.
The 6th grade. The sixth,
they put him from the 5th to the 7th grade.
And, I wasn't that smart. I'll tell you.
Thinking of that morning of that time.
Yeah. You really do. You missed.
He lost out on everything they taught in the 6th grade.
But anyway, that they did skip half of my class. I think half of it skipped ahead of me because they were the smart ones. Then we caught up and we skipped. So, but they did skip a lot of kids.
What building were you in then?
When we went from that building. We moved into the old red brick high school, which faces Main.
Mm-hmm, with the arched windows.
And the junior high had an assembly on the first floor. And the senior high had an assembly on the second floor.
And the junior high was run by Ida B. Cook.
Ida Barley Cook.
And we had her in the 7th and 8th grade. And the school on Taft Road was named after her. And,
you know, as it
turned out, Rick was, our son Rick was mayor of that
student council
at that time, and when they dedicated the school, Ida B. Cook, he
had to make a speech.
Made a speech, I remember.
And I didn't think a young kid would have, but it seemed to work fine for me. But, yeah, I was thinking of something else about our school. We, you know, the kids from West Point Park, which was Farmington Road and 7 Mile, they came to our high school, and they had to find their own way. We didn't have any buses. There weren't any buses. And another thing about school, one of the best things that ever happened to me, I was goofing off in a geometry class, probably the 9th grade, and this teacher finally lost all her patience, and she came over and she grabbed me by the hair of the head, and I mean, she shook me. And I combed loose hair out for a week, at least a week. And I've seen her at some class reunions. And from there on, I had the best grades in geometry I've ever had. I all of a sudden realized, and my parents didn't support me. They supported Miss Brassfield. And she, I saw her at a class reunion. Remember, she said, I sure do. Your dad was on the school board and I'm giving you some rough treatment.
Gave you too much money.
But it was good. And I think it's still good. As long as it's not abusive. But, those some of those things have changed.
His attention must be paid, that kind of thing.
You bet. That's right. And of course, well, Ed Malamo was there.
We've encountered your family name as in political connections in the 1880s.
Well, my great-grandfather, William, was active on the town. I don't know if it's the village or the township. There were both, you know, and they overlapped. You got services from both. Like, my dad was township clerk, and we lived in the village. But the village and the township overlapped on a lot of things. And my dad was on the school board, my great-grandfather. My grandfather spent a lot of his time in Detroit. He was a lumber salesman, and lumber was a big thing back in those days. And as I mentioned, he did at one time have a lumber. And they lived on Katy Street, right at the bottom of the school. There's a vacant lot there now. And that was my grandmother's home. And I, of course, spent a great deal of my time as a boy. But we had a barn there, and you could have horses in town. And we had horses that we kept in that barn. In fact, we had a colt born there. Now, of course, you can't have horses. And as I mentioned, that was a dirt road back in the early days.
Well, how about you and the other boys in high school? What kind of activities did you get involved in?
Well, all kinds of things. And speaking of Joe Spagnola, I had a Model T Ford. And I had Joe on the inside, and I had a boy on both running boards. It was a coupe. And we tipped over. And down in the fairgrounds, we were slewing around. And we tipped over, and the fella on the board, the fella ran. His name was Art Mitchell. And the fella on the other side flew like a rocket. Lit on his chest and skinned himself up pretty bad. And the car lit on Joe's side and his foot was caught and he was squealing just like it. But he wasn't really hurt. So I crawled out And we got these other two fellows, the one that had run and the one that was all scratched up, Kenny Chapel, and we picked the car to get Joe's foot out, and then we told him, quick, get out of here. You got to help us tip it up, and we've got to get out of here before we get in trouble. So we tipped it up, and you know, they were made. It had the old rain trough on the side, but it was like 1/8 inch thick steel. It didn't even dent the darn old Model T to tip it over. But Joe and I would, when we both worked in the summertime, we'd take a ride and drive up to Wall Lake at noon in that Model T. And so I worked always. I worked in the corner drugstore as a soda jerk for years and enjoyed that. And
my
at that time,
Mike Gunsel was.
Yeah. At that time, the drugstore would be open until 10 o'clock every night of the week and midnight on Saturday night. And it just, you know, that was just a way of life. So when I would go from school to football practice, and then I'd run back and be at the drugstore at 6 o'clock and work till 10 and then go home. Through the routine again, but it was I remember them as good old days, you know. We had a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of stores like a soda jerk, now how different are the store doing business now as they were then? What other changes do you remember? Like so-and-so store is now this, but what was it then, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that of course I remember, the grocery stores where you were served everything, and you people remember that. The C.F. Smith store, we had an A&P store on the main street, where in some of what are now the old buildings, we had a meat market, and they would butcher the animals right there, and then you'd get fresh meat. I remember Mr. Friedel, that would be Charlie Friedel's father, and Mr. Ponsford, who would have been Beth Lapham's father. They both had stores here when I was a boy. And you would see them at dark, at least in the wintertime, I remember, you'd go by and they'd be sewing. They'd have their eye shade on and a light, and they sewed the suits and made the clothes right in their shops, in their tailor shops. And it...
Are they in the same location for Dells and Latin store?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. And I may be wrong, but I thought that Lapham's were across the street. One of them was across the street. I don't know which one. And then, of course, I remember the Depression and the bank failures, and that wiped out a great number of people, including my father. Absolutely, he went broke. When you were in, he was a stockholder in the bank, and he, stockholders at that time not only lost what they had, but they had to match what their stock was worth. In other words, if you had $2,000 worth of stock, you lost that, now you had to pay $2,000. Those were the rules back in the old days. And then the foundry hit the foundry, and of course you keep thinking things are going to turn around, and he didn't want to lay his people off. And before he got done, he had a farm out here. I used to take my pony and cart and go out to the farm on 10 Mile near Beck and pick up vegetables and bring them in and sell them in town. And, but that was before He owned the farm.
Now, this big Salem train wreck happened before your time.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
I know that Jack Hoffman tells about it in his book.
Yeah.
I don't know what years that was. Back in the probably 1800s somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember that. Of course, I do remember, and I'm sure you've heard of this hill. Is this called Buckner's Hill? I've always...
We still think of it as that.
Well, we used to go to the top of that with a sled, and we'd post someone at Randolph Street. And then you could go from there to the fairgrounds. You had to have sentries posted along the route because, you know, they'd tell you, slew out, here comes a car.
Were they still ski jumping down there, little 7 mile?
I think there were some big ski jumps that were held there, but that's before my time. But then, as a boy, we did a lot of skiing there, and we built jumps. But I think they had some professional jumping there. But that's before my time. Of course, the Northville Fair was a big deal.
It was Wayne County Fair, wasn't it?
Northville Wayne County Fair, and we used to have a beautiful horse show, didn't we?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
They would come from all over to show their horses, and there'd be the hunters, the jumpers, and I know I had good friends from Ann Arbor that came, and all their children would jump, and they'd have the judges and
and
the ribbon.
And it's harness racing, but there was no betting.
No betting at all.
And they had the poultry exhibits and the sheep and the pigs and the whole thing. It was, and then they had the, what do you call it, the business exhibits. I remember my dad always had his furnaces on display. And there would be other, and then usually there would be a contest. I remember he used to have something where the person that guessed closest to the number of ears of corn or some, or, you know, pieces of corn. But it was a big attraction, and we had the Midway, and it was run. Yeah, it was run by Northville businessmen. I remember I worked for Bill Forney in his a little office, and he was in charge of the concessions at the fair. So I had free passes to all the concessions. But it was a lot of fun.
How much building was there then? You know, was it the grandstand?
The grandstand was just a piece of what it is now. And I'm not sure. They probably tore that down. I can't remember. But I would say the grandstand would hold 1,000 people, don't you think, Gene?
I would think so.
At least. And they'd come and they'd have fireworks and they'd have harness racing.
And was the track the same size?
Yes, I think it was always a half-mile track.
And in the same place, generally, when they got graded.
Yeah.
And on the infield was where Northville High School had played football. There was no seats. There were no seats. People would stand along the sidelines, and they put the goalposts up. And then all our track events were held there. The track was used for running. And then later, probably, in the mid-30s, they moved the football out to Heinz Park. You know where that football field is. And
that would be the Cass Benton Park.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, cast.
One of the play fields of the Cass Benton Park, where they're located now.
Well, in Hines Park, because Cass Benton was just that little park. And then when the whole parkway went through, Hines Park surrounded it. But if you recall, Cass Benton is just that little circle there. And I used to go out there for picnics.
And we're in a comfort station.
And that's where, you remember that, Gene, going out to Cass Benton for picnics.
Yes.
And then it became surrounded. That Hines Park was a beautiful addition to the park system. But Cass Benton made, I think, the contribution of that original property for a park.
Well, where in that area, precise location, where did they play football in?
Well, it would be west. If you were in between Center Street or Northville Downs and Cass Benton Park, the first entranceway to the left going in there, I guess that would be to the east. You're going south, the first entranceway to the east would run right into the football field. There are tennis courts down there?
Tennis courts are down there. And it would be right near where the tennis courts.
They've got the soccer field down there.
Probably now. Probably now. But at that time, and again, I don't remember, they might have put up some tiers of seats, but basically you stood on the sidelines and watched the football. And at one time, the only transportation for the teams was people who would volunteer to drive.
Or Shanks Mare.
What?
You let them walk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, down, you ran down to that field. Now, that's a pretty good height to start with. And then you practice, and then you run back. So that those things are so different. But the enthusiasm of the coaches, I remember Ted Watts would organize breakfasts, and we'd go there at 6 o'clock in the morning to practice basketball, and bring your cereal, whatever you wanted to eat, and you'd practice for 2 hours, and they were very enthusiastic. No different in that regard that I can.
Well, there's quite a heritage of sports in high school here.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Start that one again.
Bowling on the Green. You mean at Clement 7 Mile?
Yeah.
Mr. Cobflesh lived there, and he was an Englishman, and he built a green. And I remember my dad would go up there and I'd walk and watch him. They'd bowl on the green, on the grass. And Mr. Cobflesh, I had a paper here which you're welcome to look at if you like. And you probably remember it, but it shows a picture of Mr. Cobflesh and Dr. Cavell and Dr. Alexander and my dad and Fred Light. That was the school board at that time. And Mr. Cobflesh was the fellow that lives on the corner that you're talking about. There's still a big house there.
Yes.
And if you recall.
Would that be the northeast corner of Clement and Main Street?
Mm-hmm. Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, you know, if you went up Main Street, once you got past Clement, there was nothing. In fact, the road didn't go all the way through the Beck. And we used to go up there, and it was Bloom's Woods. And it was beautiful in its natural setting. We'd bounce around up there in our old Model Ts and things like that. But you didn't drive a car much in that area. It was driving through the woods. In fact, a young man, Dale Bray, who later became head of the entomology department, Delaware University. Loved bugs and all nature when he was a boy, and he would hike. And he recently visited us because we live in that general vicinity. And he said, I remember across the street from where you are now, there was a artesian well, and I used to drink water over there. And sure enough, there, you know, there it is on somebody's property. We went over and looked at it.
Oh, it's still?
It's still there. In fact, he had dredged out in this big pond there. But,
you remember the Hammonds that mm-hmm. lived there. Well, that's
property the
property where the well is.
Where the artesian well is. I don't know. I probably should search my memory for some of the interesting things that I'm sure I can't remember, but...
you had a grandmother...
my grandmother, Amber, that was the wife of the lumber company, Amber Pond, deal, lived to be 103. And she still had all of her faculties. And she lived there below the school almost until she was in her 80s. Then she went into a rest home. But she had all kinds of tales, of course. And I didn't learn enough
it's
from
it. It's too
her.
Bad we didn't take more down.
It's too bad we didn't have tape recorders back in those days.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
It's hard to get dictation to write down what they say.
Well, and you know, to get people like you to draw this out, you don't find too many that'll do it. I think it's a real service to the community that you
well,
do this.
It's amazing what you learn.
Yeah. You talk about the Depression, and I remember that my dad telling me that he had this employee, and he had to lay him off, and they didn't have unemployment compensation. And they had very limited money. And this fellow would go home, and my dad tells me that he told him that he'd ask the kids, now, what do you want, kids? We can have hamburger tonight, or you can each have, or, you know, a meal of meat and everything, or you can just have rice and potatoes, but if you forego the meat, you can each have a dime to go to the show, to go to the movie. And the kids would elect to take the dime and go to the movie. But you see, it was sometime, and I can't remember, and I'm sure this is recorded history, that Henry Ford came along with that $5 a day. Pardon me, I don't know when that was, but it was during the Depression that he came along with $5 a day. But people, that was big money, because people were working for 30 cents an hour and less. A dollar a day was not uncommon. And I'd go out to Meadowbrook and caddy, and I would get a dollar. And a man would work all day. A lot of changes. But I thought that little piece about some of the suffering that people did endure during the Depression.
Well, that was one of your means of employment, was caddying at the golf course.
Oh, I caddied, I mowed lawns, I worked in a drugstore, I peddled papers. I used to peddle papers. I'd start downtown, and I would walk down to the Ford plant. And then I would go up Griswold Street to the bridge, railroad bridge. And then I'd walk down the railroad tracks and over to the cider mill and back and catch this part of town and go back. It was a problem. I don't know what it was. I wanted to measure. I don't think I ever measured it, but it was a good hike.
What paper was it?
Well, the News and the Times. It was the afternoon papers, News and Times.
Have you made?
Did you have any trouble collecting? I know most kids did.
Well, yeah, we
Couldn't
did.
Have a heart to go out
there. Mm-hmm. You know, I had one lady stop me one morning. I'd collect maybe $2 at the point. She stopped me. She lived right on Main Street, and she was with her husband. He was an invalid, and they were on some kind of state aid. And she called me in, and she said, "Can you loan me $2? She was in tears. She said, "Our money hasn't come. We don't have anything to eat." And I gave her $2. And when I got back to the paper station, God, I catch hell for doing that. But by golly, she got her check within a couple, 3 days, and she called me in, and she paid me back the $2. But to borrow from a paper boy, you got to be in pretty dire straits.
But it's a good reflection of the times.
Yes, yes it is. Yeah. And of course, I remember Saturday nights very distinctly, and I'm sure Gene does too, that you go downtown and the farmers came in with their horses and buggies and they tied them and they did their shopping. And it maybe you remember we had treasure hunts. They would, you would, whenever you bought something from a participating merchant, you got a little ticket with a number on it, maybe a 6-digit number. Then on Saturday night, they would put, they'd draw numbers, and each store would have a giveaway. It might be an electric clock here, or a toaster here, or a shirt here. And they'd put the numbers, and then everyone would come, and they'd look at all their numbers and see if they won prize. And the same thing with the theater. You'd go in the theater, and remember they advertised?
Remember the
so the dishes? Or?
The dishes.
Yeah.
What were those dishes called? Depression glass. And they would have sets of those that they would give away at the movie theaters then. And then on Saturday night, they would always have a street dance. And this was every Saturday night, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where was that held then? What part of the street?
I would say between Main and Dunlap.
I can remember them in both locations, between Main and Dunlap on Center, and between Center and the next street on Main. Center and the theater on Main. I can mm-hmm. remember both places. Mm-hmm.
They'd
what
close
music?
It. What? They'd have a band.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They bring in a band. And you know, when the races first started here, well, they started having harness races, and there was a fellow that owned Cole's Bar, Mr. Cole, and he actually went down and figured the odds and took the bets, and there was no government control. He was a book. And then they wanted to announce, when they finally came in with a track, they wanted an announcer, and we had a clothier here named Orla Owen. And he had the PA system on top of his car, and he would go down there and he'd announce the races. Well, he then ended up as general manager in Northville Downs. And then they came in from the Livonia racetrack. What's that called?
Wolverine.
And actually offered him double his salary if he'd come and take that over, you know. So, but he starts off with just this PA system and doing kind of a community service, and boom, it ended up as his career. But a lot of things.
This might be a good time. I don't know whether anyone else has covered the difference between the racing club and the Northville
Downs. Yeah, the property is not owned by the Downs. That was the original Wayne County Fair property.
And my father was a stockholder in that. And each share was worth about $10 when it was originally purchased. And I can't tell you how many shares, but there weren't a great number of shares. Well, then when the racetrack started, some of the people went out and bought up the shares wherever they could. I remember I was working in Chelsea and a fellow came to me and he said, I've got four shares of Wayne County, Norfolk Wayne County Fair Stock, and I've been offered $50 a share. And I said, boy, don't sell it, it's worth a lot more than that. I think today it's worth several thousand dollars per share. But anyway, the driving club owns the property, and the Downs leases the property from the driving club. So, yeah, they're two separate organizations.
Is it the driving club, then, that is expanding the grounds?
Yes. There's some... I think maybe the grandstand and that sort of thing may be the responsibility of the Downs, based on their contract. But the driving club owns the property. Mike Allen, of course. Have you ever talked to Mike? Pardon? He'd be a good one. You know, he started his monument works in his garage down next to my dad's foundry. When I was a boy, Mike was just a young guy. And he's quite an artist, you know. He designs all those tombstones. And he would be out there chiseling away at the granite, making tombstones. But he knows the history very well of Northland. Of course, he was the mayor for longest-serving mayor of any community. And he would have a lot of history for you, I would suggest.
Tell about your dad again.
My dad's name was Cheryl Ambler, and he owned the Ambler Furnace and Foundry Works, and he was on the school board, he was on the village council, and he was on the township. He was the secretary of the or clerk of a township. So he served in many political categories, and he was active in the exchange club and active on the bank boards, which helped wipe him out. And he owned a lot of property. He owned three or four stores and several houses. He lost all of them, including that 120-acre farm, which I wish I owned right now out on 10 Mile. But all those things that went, you know. And I had a little brother who died at age 9. And that was a terrible tragedy for our family, naturally.
Was it an accident?
No,
or illness?
He had an asthmatic attack. And he was given some the adrenaline that speeds up your heart, and then it was going too fast, so they gave him a counteracting shot, and it just stopped. So it was a pretty severe thing for our family.
Hey, Larry.
Hi, Larry. Remember, Gene, when this is back when we were probably in high school or junior high, that they redid the streets of downtown Northville. There used to be curbs that were 30 inches high. And remember? You'd have to have a step up to get up to the sidewalk.
The sidewalk's the upper level.
Yeah, the sidewalks were the upper level, and they came through and they redid the downtown streets. And now they have done them again. What was that, 5 years ago?
82.
So they did. So I would imagine that was about 32, I bet it was 50 years, that they redid them the first time.